This is Jeff T from the Club 520 podcast. When it comes to your feet, eBay's got your back. When you see the blue check mark that says authenticity guaranteed, that means real experts are checking your sneakers. Every stitch, down to the sole. They even smell them because nothing says fresh like the scent of real kicks. So kick back and relax. From the drop to your doorstep, eBay doesn't play games with your sneaker game. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal with eBay authenticity guaranteed. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves, so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Hey, it's Bobby Sylvester, and I'll be joined by Mike Tagliere and Jim Sannis in a minute to chat about undervalued players. But first, I want to remind you all about the signed Antonio Brown jersey we're giving away. The sweepstakes is going on thanks to one of our sponsors, PristineAuction.com. Pristine Auction has signed jerseys, signed helmets, and I even saw a Luke Skywalker signed lightsaber on there today. So Tags and I are not Star Wars guys, but it's still interesting nonetheless to a lot of you, I'm sure. They auction off hundreds of items every day, and the website they use is super easy. All you have to do to enter our sweepstakes is write and review us on iTunes and send a screenshot to contest@fantasypros.com. When you do that, you're going to be entered into all the giveaways for the rest of the season. In the meantime, support Pristine Auction by taking a look at what they have for you, and please make sure to let them know Fantasy Pro sent you. All right, let's talk some football. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast with Mike Tagliere, and I'm Bobby Sylvester. Tags, what's up?
What's happening, man? Good to be back. I'm loving this. We've finally switched over. If the listeners haven't heard us talk about it, we're switching over. We're doing 3 days a week, and this is our third episode of the week, and I could not be more excited, man.
Hey, by the way, can we make an agreement? Let's not mention my defeat in the Name That Player game from last episode, okay?
We should always talk about that because you got swept. It was a 3-0 sweep that Dan Harris put on you.
I'm pretty sure I got swept so bad that I'm going to be fired from that role. I'm probably going to have to be the one asking questions from now on.
I'll be ready. I mean, if you're the one asking questions, I gotta step my game up because I'm sure, you know, the guests are going to try and obviously study up to top me. But I could look forward to trying to be undefeated in that game for sure.
Hey, by the way, our guest today is Jim Sannis of NumberFire.com. He's making his debut on the football podcast. I've had him on the Fantasy Pros Baseball podcast before. Tags, he's a real gem. It's going to be a fun show today. Jim, thanks for coming on the show, man.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for the introduction. How are you doing today?
Doing great, man. Jim, we had you on for the baseball show, like I mentioned, and we did a similar show for baseball, and we agreed on like everything, and we were right on most of it, which is awesome. But there's a lot of pressure on you here, Jim, because I'm expecting you to nail this all for fantasy football, too.
I don't know, man. I've been like so zoned in on baseball for so long that I'm ready to spout off Matt Carpenter as being a value running back, and I feel like maybe that's probably not going to happen. I'm not 100% sold that he won't be, but hey, you know, there's always a possibility that it'll happen.
Well, guys, I don't have any food hot takes for today, and Tags doesn't have any more to say about wearing a diaper to auction draft. So let's just get on to the first segment, undervalued
don't ask, Jim.
Players.
Don't ask. Don't ask.
I'll leave that one there. Yeah, for sure.
So the first segment is undervalued players, and we're going to be going position by position, each naming one or two players that we think is undervalued. And Tags and I accepted a challenge. We're going to talk about players that haven't hardly been discussed this preseason. So if you want to hear about our love for John Brown, Kevin White, Tyrod Taylor, you can find it in virtually every other episode, but not here. There you go, Tags. I met my quota for mentioning Kevin White in every episode.
Yeah, I was I was warned not to talk about John Brown today, so I'm not going to talk about fantasy's most undervalued wide receiver. I'm not going to talk about John Brown today.
All right, so Jim, we're going to start with running backs first. Who's your undervalued running back that you love this season?
I mean, I love Ty Montgomery, man, and I think that it kind of just reflects my mindset when it comes to running back, where I hate talent. I don't hate talent, but I hate judging a player based on talent. I more want to draft a running back based on the role and the situation which he is. And with Ty Montgomery, that situation is being, right now at least, the top running back for one of the most efficient offenses in all of football. He has Aaron Rodgers as his quarterback, and to me that's abundantly appealing. Now, I know there are risks with Ty Montgomery being that Green Bay had to draft, I think, like three running backs back in April, so that is a risk, and it's something that I acknowledge, and it makes me more understand his ADP. But let's say we enter August and Ty Montgomery is still a top guy. He has a role in the receiving game. He can run the ball pretty well, as we saw last year as well, and he's tied to that offense. That, to me, screams that this guy should be drafted higher than RB17, which is where he is in the expert consensus. And if he is there for me this year, I will take him 100% of the time.
Now, Tags, I know that you're not as excited about Montgomery because you love Jamal Williams. You mentioned the stat. He only rushed for double-digit carries once all last season. But, you know, he's a big dude. He added some weight. Apparently, he's got a lot better at run blocking. What if we get into the preseason and we don't just hear that Ty Montgomery's a starter, but, like, they're giving him a lot of carries and stuff? Tags, how high would you be willing to take him at that point?
So here's the thing. Ty Montgomery is someone that I'm not totally against. I actually wrote up a player profile on him because you want a part of this Packers offense one way or the other, whether it be wide receivers, whether it be the running back or Aaron Rodgers, tight end, doesn't matter. You want a part of this offense. I've mentioned it when talking about Carlos Hyde, is that the top eight running backs last year in terms of points per game, they came from teams who are on top 14 scoring offenses. And so you basically, the Packers are going to be in that category. So it's like, we want to know who this running back is. The only issue with Ty Montgomery is the fact that we don't know if he's able to pass block. Mike McCarthy, all offseason, the beat writers all offseason have been talking about his pass blocking. And if he can do that, if Ty Montgomery comes out in the preseason and he's able to pass block, and you know, you hear them talking him up, I am willing to take him as a, I would say, a top 18 running back in standard formats. PPR, you get even higher, where it's like maybe in that 12 to 14 range is where I'd talk about him. But with that being said, he's being drafted right now fairly. You know, he's got some risk built into him, but he's got the upside. We know that. But I would argue that Jamal Williams is probably the running back that I would say is more undervalued at this particular time, just because it comes down to risk reward, right? When you're spending a number, so Jamal Williams is the number 52 running back off boards. Imagine this.
Stupid.
Imagine this. We get to the first or even the second preseason game where the starters play a little bit longer. And let's say that Ty Montgomery, he blows a blitz. They blitz Rodgers. He allows a sack, and he's just not living up to what he's supposed to be doing. You know, the next series in the field, they bring out Jamal Williams. Jamal Williams breaks a long, you know, 40, 50 yard run. We'll say it's a touchdown. All of a sudden, his ADP is skyrocketing. Meanwhile,
you're right,
Ty Montgomery's is going to come down a little to earth. Now, Ty Montgomery is the only one in this team that is probably the only true three-down running back, the one that can probably be out there on all three downs, because Jamal Williams is not necessarily known for his hands. But at the same time, I think Jamal Williams is being drafted at his floor, and the risk is worth the reward in terms of, you know, what you're getting there. But I'm not against Ty Montgomery. It's just, I got a stat real quick if I could throw this out here. The Packers running backs before last year, when they were obviously, it was like a kamikaze of effects, there were so many things going on that changed the circumstances. But looking at this team from 2013 through 2015, here are the fantasy points scored by their running backs: 385, 379, and 382. That is all
within 6. It's like James Starks territory too.
It's within 6 fantasy points every single year. So it was like the most predictable running back, the backfield that you can predict, but with Eddie Lacy and James Starks. So, you know, we want part of this backfield again. So I'm definitely not against Ty Montgomery. He's got the most upside here. But at the same time, I think Jamal Williams, Jim, can we make a case that you could draft both Ty Montgomery and Jamal Williams?
I tend not to do that, but I think that my thought process is, if I don't get Ty Montgomery, then I want Jamal Williams. Like,
yeah,
if I'm not
point.
Getting one, I want the other. I tend to not draft same guys from the same team. I did it once with Woodhead and Dixon. That was just kind of happened to be how it was, because Kenneth Dixon was going, I thought, too late at that time. But I tend to not want guys because I can't use them at the same time, and that's kind of my mindset there. So I probably won't draft both, but if I don't get Ty Montgomery, I want Jamal Williams, or even Aaron Jones, to be fully honest. I want one of those three guys on every single team that I have, because I acknowledge, like you said, there's a possibility that guy is not Ty Montgomery. And if that happens, I want to have who it will be. And right now, I think that when I'm looking at Ty Montgomery's ADP, the guys he's going behind are Joe Mixon, Carlos Hyde, Marshawn Lynch, Isaiah Crowell, Lamar Miller, Leonard Fournette, Todd Gurley. There is risk in every single one of those guys for one reason or another, which is why I view Montgomery as being undervalued, even though, you know, as you've said, and I think said very well, there's still a lot of risk in it.
All right, so Tags, who's your guy? You talked about Jamal Williams a little bit. I'm sure you have another one for us.
I do. CJ Anderson is a guy that I'm winding up with on a lot of my teams. He's going right around that 19 to 21 range. It's been varying the last couple weeks, and, you know, it's honestly moved down. CJ Anderson, if you don't know, over the last 3 years, he's averaged 4.6 yards per carry behind a subpar offensive line. Every other running back combined, whether it be Ronnie Hillman, Devontae Booker, you know, all those guys that combine for those carries, they've all combined to average 3.9 yards per carry behind that same line.
Yuck.
CJ Anderson has scored a touchdown every 25 carries. All those others combined, every 34 carries. You know, the Broncos, people have kind of overlooked that this offseason. They're talking about the quarterback and who's going to start. I don't think it necessarily matters who's going to be starting a quarterback, whether it be Paxton Lynch or Trevor Siemian. I think they're going to want to run the ball. Everything that they've done this offseason has screamed, we want to run the ball. They went out and they got Ron Leary, who was the best guard off the Cowboys' offensive line. They went and got Raiders' right tackle, Menelik Watson. They also
Hall of Famer Jamal Charles.
No, don't talk. We're going to get to Jamal Charles. But they got Garrett Bowles. You know, a lot of people had him down as the top tackle in the draft. They drafted him in the first round. So after, you know, playing behind this mediocre offensive line and finishing, he was the number 11 running back when he went down last year. He was averaging over 15 carries per game. This is
against the hardest schedule in the NFL at that point, too.
It was really, really tough. And that's something people overlook, too. But the one thing I want to pound home here is that people are talking about Jamal Charles, they're talking about Devontae Booker. I want to remind everyone that CJ Anderson was not supposed to be on the Broncos. He was actually supposed to be Jay Ajayi's replacement in Miami when they signed him to an offer sheet about, you know, just a little bit earlier, a little over a year ago is when that happened. And nobody expected the Broncos to match that, but they did. You know, they love CJ Anderson there. Nothing has changed with that. And being drafted at number 19, he's a player that I would take over Ty Montgomery just because I feel like his role is safer in the offense. I understand the upside in terms of, you know, the offenses, and I think Ty Montgomery may have slightly more upside than CJ Anderson, but it would not shock me at year's end if we're talking about CJ Anderson as a second or a third round pick next year.
Agree. I mean, you remember he was being drafted sixth overall a couple years ago after he exploded in the second half. This is a very good running back. If he puts it all together, he'd definitely be an RB1. Jim, how do you feel about CJ Anderson?
Yeah, I think that it's not just what Tags mentioned, but also if you look before CJ Anderson got hurt last year, his snap rates were great. He played 83% of the snaps in week one.
Wow.
He was above 60 pretty much every week before he got hurt. He was 78.4 in week six, which is his final, I guess, full healthy game. And when you can get a running back who is that on the field that often and who can, you know, occasionally get some targets, get some red zone usage, I think it's fine, and the upgrades on the offensive line are great, and I agree with the analysis that Tags had about the quarterbacks, where I think the situation here is good enough with the upgrades on the offensive line, with Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders at receiver, where whether it's Siemian or Lynch, I think they can succeed, and they'll at least be good enough to support a fantasy-viable running back. So I fully agree. Anderson's a really nice guy, a really nice value for where he's at, too. And I think that the floor here is being a little bit understated based on where he's going.
All right, guys. My player is Doug Martin, the muscle hamster, otherwise known as the player drafted outside the top 70 with the best chance of being a first-round-level performer come fantasy football playoff time. Yeah, he suspended 3 games, and no, it's not a contract year, and yes, he's been volatile, but there's one stat that's kind of important here. Both times he played a full season, everyone, he finished as a top 12 VBD player in fantasy football. No, not a top 12 running back, a top 12 overall player. The system is now better around him, his demons are behind him, he apparently looks as good as ever before. And he has something to prove. I'm sold that even though he's being drafted higher than he was at this point last season, we're talking about a legitimate RB1 and maybe a high RB1 in the 7th round when he comes back. He's being drafted as running back number 32 right now. I'm reaching for Doug Martin before anyone else beats me to the punch. And I'll tell you, he's the player that I'll have on most of my teams this year. Not Kevin White, not Hunter Henry. It's Doug Martin.
You know what's crazy here, Bobby, is that I didn't realize that Doug Martin was that low in the consensus ADP. And the reason I say that is because I've been doing a lot of MFL 10s and, you know, I'll take a peek at Fantasy Football Calculator. But now on Fantasy Pros, we have an aggregate ADP where we have it listed with ESPN, CBS, Fantasy Football Calculator, NFL.com, Fantrack, all these websites. We have their ADPs in one place and you can see the varying things. So Doug Martin's is as high as number 20 and as low as number 36. So it's really varying in Doug Martin because, you know, around that RB 30 range, I love him right there. I really do. But I've seen him go as high as the fourth round in some drafts I'm doing. And it's like, what is the breaking point with Doug Martin, right? Because I feel like you're getting a strong player. I believe he's going to come back better than he was last year. You might be see a resurgence like the one that he had in 2015. The issue is that I've talked about in the show, Doug Martin is going to be suspended for the first three games, which could put your team in a hole if you're drafting him too early, because you're passing on guys like Ty Montgomery, like CJ Anderson, who are going to be there for your team the first couple weeks. And if you start 0-3 because you took a suspended player, or you know what I mean, it could put you in a bad position.
Yeah, I get that, but like, I don't know, I'm all or nothing. Like, the view is the same no matter where you are, second or last. You know what I mean?
But what's the breaking point?
I want to go into the playoffs with the best team. If I don't make the playoffs, you know what? So what? It happens. But if I'm going into the playoffs, I want the best team, and Doug Martin's going to help you with that.
I think he's good for best ball, and that I think I love that point that you made. It's just like there's certain leagues where you need to go all in, you need to be bold, like the Scott Fishbowl. I just took part in that, and there's some players I took there I wouldn't normally take, but you have to take chances on players, and Doug Martin's one of those players. But what I want to know, Jim, and you feel free to put your input here too, is what is the earliest that you would debate taking Doug Martin? Like, Bobby, you obviously just talked about him, so let's get your take first. What's the earliest that you would consider Doug Martin if you knew that everybody else in the draft was somewhat high on him?
I'd take Doug Martin about 55 right now, and I'd be tempted if his ADP got higher to take him around 48. That's the highest I'd be willing to go, and I know that is kind of absurd, but I'm a huge believer in him, so yeah, I'd go that high.
Okay, so late fourth, early fifth, yeah.
With the consensus rankings right now, Doug Martin's RB32, that's a couple of spots behind Paul Perkins, and I could not, in my mind, defend taking him ahead of Paul Perkins, just because it seems as if the role Perkins will have is going to be good. He's not going to be suspended, which is certainly good as well, so I couldn't go above that. I think that my earliest I could take him is kind of where he's at in the consensus ranks right now with RB32, and part of that is because he was pretty bad last year. I mean, looking back to last year, we had the stat at number five called success rate, which just measures the percentage of runs that increase the team's expected points for the drive. Jacquizz Rodgers' success rate was 46%. And Doug Martin's was 34%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Rodgers also wasn't on drugs, though.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's a positive. You know, that's a minor positive. Charles Sims was 27 for what's that worth. So at least yeah. Doug Martin outperformed him. But I think that worries me, that if Jacquizz Rodgers has these first couple of games, you know, they brought in the rookie as well, McNichols. So like, if those guys come in and they perform well, there's no guarantee that Doug Martin comes back and is immediately the top dog. That's why I think that, you know, his ranking right now is fair, but I'm also not going to go out of my way to get him on my rosters.
Yeah. And just to give you guys an idea, right now his consensus ADP is number 80 overall. And I'd be drafting him at, I said, number 55. Tevin Coleman is number 57. I'd take him above Tevin Coleman.
I might do that as well.
I actually agree with that. I think Tevin Coleman's being overdrafted.
Yeah, Amir Abdullah's right there as well. Frank Gore. So it's like not Abdullah. Really...
Jim, real quick, before we move on, just a quick take. What's your take on Amir Abdullah?
I love him. I had two guys on my list. Ty Montgomery was one and Amir Abdullah was the other. Looking back to week one, he played 61.5% of the snaps. And like, he had a good role. He had five targets in that game. And nothing we saw from Zach Zenner or Theo Riddick last year says that they should unseat him as being the top guy in this offense. And they added to their offensive line again this offseason after they did last year as well. I love Amir Abdullah. I think that he's a really good value at RB25.
Yeah, buddy. All right.
By the way, we should outlaw mentions of Zach Zenner on this show. After the disaster last season, let's just outlaw it.
I would happen to agree. I was never a Zach Zenner fanboy.
All right, let's go wide receiver. Jim, who's your guy?
Kenny Britt, man. He was in an awful offense last year with the Los Angeles Rams, and he's going to the Browns this year. It's kind of like with what Tags mentioned about the Broncos. They upgraded their offensive line aggressively in the offseason. To a fault, I'm a Cody Kessler truther. So, like, if he winds up winning the job, I think that he's an efficient quarterback. And most likely, even if Kessler is good, they're going to have to throw the football. And Britt has shown that he can be successful from an efficiency standpoint in bad offenses, which to me says this guy's floor is way above wide receiver 43. So if you give him a solid market share, if you give him the Terrell Pryor role from last year, he is going to be pushing for like a wide receiver two type numbers, and you're not paying that cost for him right now. So I think that right now, both his ceiling and his floor exceed where he's going. And based on what we saw last year, I cannot stop drafting Kenny Britt on pretty much every team that I have.
What a smart man. Tex?
This is one where I'm going to be completely honest with you guys. I actually got into like a disagreement about Kenny Britt on a show. It was earlier this week. And this is like, you know, for me to be honest, it's like, you know, I'm a fan just like everybody else. I just happen to look at a lot of things, you know. Kenny Britt is someone that I don't necessarily believe in, because I think that what we saw last year is somewhat an outlier in what's been a mediocre career. Like, he had a promising start. I remember he had a 200-yard game, and it was like three or four touchdowns. It was something massive, and I remember because my wife had him on her roster, and she swore at me for not telling her to play him that week. I'm like, how was I supposed to know Kenny Britt was going to like just pop out? But if you look at his career, last year was the first year in his career where he went over 800 yards. Like, that's just, and it's not a very short career. It's been a long time. He's had trouble staying healthy. I actually am with you, Jim. I think that Cody Kessler is competent enough to support a wide receiver in fantasy. The thing is Corey Coleman is there. So when going through this, and this is, like I said, I want to be completely transparent here, is that I don't know who the number one is going to be in this offense. I wanted to say it was Corey Coleman, but there's a lot of people, including yourself, telling me that Kenny Britt should be that guy, and that I'm almost taking Corey Coleman's, you know, draft pedigree for, you know, just putting that in there when he wasn't very good last year. And it's hard for me to defend him because he wasn't, you know, his catch rate was poor. But I also happen to think that Cody Kessler may not fit his skill set in terms of the quarterback that he needs to get the ball downfield to him. So this is one I'm really, really torn on when it comes to Britt. So I don't want to say that you're wrong, because I just don't have a strong feeling about him.
I think that one thing that I do like here, though, is you mentioned Corey Coleman. If I don't get Kenny Britt, it's the same thing like I mentioned with the Packers running backs. If I don't get Britt, I want Coleman. I think that's kind of the mindset I have with this Browns team, because they're both cheap. Yeah, it's 42 and 45 as far as the wide receiver rankings right now. One of them is probably going to be a legit wide receiver. They could both sustain market shares of 20%. If they do that, they're going to be fantasy viable. So if I don't get Britt, I'll go Coleman. I have no objections to either guy with where they're going right now.
I love the tape on Kenny Britt. He's just, you know, he's a prototype. He really is. But how would we know how good he is? We're talking Vince Young, Kerry Collins, Sean Hill. And last year, that mess they put out there in Los Angeles, Cody Kessler's the best quarterback he has ever had.
No, well, he's had Matt Hasselbeck and Ryan Fitzpatrick, too.
Oh, yeah, that changes things a little bit.
Ryan Fitzpatrick did support Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker a year ago.
True.
I don't want people to forget that.
Yeah, you're right. Andy has a really good beard, so.
He does have a fantastic beard. It's phenomenal.
But, you know, I think this Browns offense is not bad with Kessler. You know, they've got Crowell, who I'm not high on with his draft value, but he's a solid running back. They've got the great offensive line. And I think Kenny Britt, we're going to see the best of him if he can stay healthy. His problem's been health.
Here's my question for you guys. Quincy Enunwa or Kenny Britt?
Enunwa. But it's close. Yeah. I like him both.
Because of the market share, I'll go Enunwa.
I think that's fair. That's the argument that I was on that other show. And I was like, I was defending Enunwa. And then by the end of it, I was like, you know what? Maybe I just don't have a strong feeling on Britt. I just can't feel confident in any way about him. And with Enunwa, at least I know the target share is going to be there. And there is no Corey Coleman on the other side of the field.
Plus, Britt's going two picks before John Brown. It's not like you're going to pass on John Brown.
That's exactly why I will own zero Kenny Britt.
I'm trying to tempt you to talk about it, man. I'm trying to get you in trouble.
Nope, that's my guy. Everybody knows it. I'm just gonna sit here and be quiet.
All right, so now the pressure's on, Tags. It's up to you to give us a wide receiver not named John Brown. Who are you gonna talk about?
I actually have another one that I'm starting to feel stronger and stronger and stronger about, where I might just put him up there with John Brown, and I might have both these receivers on like every team, and that is Jeremy Maclin. Jeremy Maclin is going as the 41st wide receiver off the board right now in the aggregate ADP. So here's, I've put a couple of some notes so that I can share with you guys. Joe Flacco has never produced a top 15 wide receiver. That's a problem, right? But at the same time, he has produced a top 32 wide receiver every single year. So when looking at it, the Ravens team, the targets that left, a lot of people point to Steve Smith and Kamar Aiken. It's not just that. Kyle Juchek, he was 49 targets. Darren Waller just got suspended for the year, 17 targets. Dennis Pitta, 121 targets now off the team. You know, Ben Watson is not going to get very many targets. Danny Woodhead, as much as you like the 32-year-old, you know, bold-legged running back, he's not going to get more than 100 targets. So this team has zero red zone targets outside of Jeremy Maclin, who has somehow been forgotten about. People want to put a cap on his touchdowns and this and that. Here is a fun fact for you guys. Prior to the 2016 season where he played hurt, you know, he missed some games, the last two seasons, Maclin totaled 18 touchdowns. That was more than every single wide receiver except Odell Beckham, Antonio Brown, Brandon Marshall, Dez Bryant, and Randall Cobb. That's it.
No
way. Those are the only wide receivers who scored more touchdowns than Jeremy Maclin. And by the way, his quarterbacks during those two seasons, Alex Smith, Nick Foles, and Mark Sanchez. So looking at everything.
Wow, man.
Yeah, the range I'm projecting Maclin in is the 120 target range. That's about where I feel really comfortable, and I felt even better about it when they told me that he's going to be in the Steve Smith role of the offense. He's been in that range three times before in his career. 115 targets in 2010, 122 in 2012, and 124 in 2015. In those seasons, he's averaged 75 receptions for 970 yards and 8.3 touchdowns. Those numbers in 2016 would have amounted to a top 15 wide receiver in fantasy. So Jeremy Maclin,
man,
you are sold. Yes, that's what I'm saying, is the number 41 wide receiver. I'm willing to take him right around that number 30 range, and you get that built-in equity with everything that he does from there. Just know your company. That's what I'm saying, is you could probably get Maclin around that, you know, 30 to 35 range. You can get John Brown in that 35 to 40 range, and that's what I'm saying. I'll probably have both of those guys on every single one of my fantasy teams.
And Flacco threw the ball more than anyone last year, and the
last
year
2 years. The last 2 years, yeah. They let the Ravens. I think that changes a little bit.
What was his ADP last year? He was going like number 50 or 60, right?
He was a
fourth
round pick.
Why would he be 40,
50
spots lower right now? Better situation.
Yeah, it's recency bias, man. Things change real fast in the NFL, and people all of a sudden, after playing with game manager Alex Smith for the last 2 years, they just want to forget about Jeremy Maclin, and I'm not going to be one of those people.
Yeah, you're right on the money there. I love all the takes you guys have given. Jim, what do you have to say about Maclin?
I don't mind him at all. I think that the problem is that he's going in the same spot where I like a lot of guys. I like the potential market share for Cam Meredith. I know Kevin White's your boy, but Meredith was really good last year in his role. I like John Brown, as you talk about. I love John Brown as well. I think that's a super smart take. Kenny Britt's right there. Randall Cobb is right there, who I think is super undervalued. Tyrell Williams is right there, especially now with the news about Mike Williams potentially being out.
Yeah.
Adam Thielen's there. So, like, I like Jeremy Maclin. There are just a lot of dudes in that exact same range who I like as well, and I can talk myself into literally any single one of them on any given day.
I'd feel happy if my three wide receivers were those three guys and I just loaded up everywhere else, because you can trust all those guys you just mentioned. Great values to be had at wide receiver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's an argument that can be made that you could take running backs in the first four rounds and be okay at wide receiver this year.
Yeah. All right, guys, my player is Eric Decker. When he signed, I expected his ADP to take a major leap. It hasn't really. He's sitting there at ADP number 95 right now. I'm not some major Eric Decker truther, but we're talking about someone who finished number 11 among wide receivers last year in points per game, ahead of Doug Baldwin, Dez Bryant, Amari Cooper, Demaryius Thomas. The year before, he was number 14, ahead of Calvin Johnson, T.Y. Hilton, Mike Evans. He was a top 10 fantasy receiver in 2012 and 2013. Guys, this is a great player we're talking about. Not a wide receiver number 37. I get it, there's injury risk, but there is also with Julian Edelman, Keenan Allen. Neither of them have anywhere near the same track record. Okay, maybe I'm an Eric Decker truther.
Jim, what's your take on Decker?
Yeah, I think he's fun. And last year I had tons of Decker, like just disgusting levels of Eric Decker exposure, and it burned me so badly when he got hurt. And I think that, you know, even though I like what Rishard Matthews can do, and I think that there's a possibility that Rishard Matthews winds up being still a pretty heavy presence in this team, I am worried about the mentality they seem to have about wanting to run the football and grind some clock. I do worry about that, but with Decker being such a low-cost guy at wide receiver 37, that kind of, I think those risks are baked into that cost right now, which is why I'm okay with it. So I like Decker where he's going. I think that he's totally fine there. I'm not opposed to getting Matthews as well. I think that he's a really good value at wide receiver 50. So there are some guys on that team who I want to get, because Marcus Mariota is just a really efficient quarterback, and I want exposure to the guys who will be getting the balls he throws.
So we're going to get on over to tight ends and quarterbacks here in just a second. We're going to start moving a little faster. But first, I want to step back and tell you all about the sponsor of today's show, RTSports.com. That's real-time fantasy sports. And they have everything you're looking for in fantasy football this year. Award-winning commissioner services with fully customizable leagues. They've got a killer app, and perhaps most exciting are their best ball and actively managed leagues. They're also a legal operator in New York, Missouri, Colorado, and most states. So if you're in those states and you're bumming about missing out on a lot of action, you can still likely play rtsports.com/pros. They've paid out millions to winners. Again, that's rtsports.com/pros. And be sure to type the pros so they know we sent you. All right, guys, we're moving on over to tight end. Like I said, Jim, who's your guy?
I've got a lot of them. I can only talk about one, though. So I will mention Kyle Rudolph. I think he's a bargain at tight end 8. I think that's awesome. I am on board with everyone else who seems to like Jack Doyle at tight end 13. But I want to talk about Austin Hooper, because when I'm drafting a tight end, all I want is touchdown potential, because that's such a large portion of the points that they score. And Austin Hooper is a tight end on an offense that had historic paces last year. And he's the 20th tight end off the board, going behind a guy in CJ Fedorowicz, so I have a rookie quarterback, Cameron Brate, who may not be the top tight end on his team, Jason Witten, who is ancient. And I think, to me, the upsides in Austin Hooper in that offense are pretty grotesque. We saw Jacob Tammy be fantasy relevant last year, and that's Jacob Tammy, before he went down to injury. And I think that if Austin Hooper can get a job, even with baking in the regression that will happen for the Atlanta Falcons offense, Austin Hooper can get buckets. And I think that that's kind of what I want. I want to shoot for the upside there. Tight end 20, I don't think that upside is really being taken into account.
Yeah, I'm with you. Everyone knows my thoughts on Austin Hooper. Tags, what do you think?
Hooper's an interesting one. You know, he's someone that I want to bump up my projections. It's kind of tough with Kyle Shanahan leaving and the offense changing. You know, Jacob Tammy not re-signing is a massive deal. And, you know, I it's funny. I've been working on a piece today in regards to tight end target regression, and Hooper's on the other side of that. So NFL teams on average have targeted their, well, in 2016 they targeted their tight end position 115 times, which is a lot. You know, it's like when you take a look at the Falcons roster, it's like, okay, who's going to eat up these targets? And if you're a tight end and you're seeing 80 targets a year, you're almost guaranteed to finish as a top 12 tight end. It's just kind
and he's really talented too. With 80 targets, that could be huge.
And we saw it through the playoffs too. You know, he kind of popped in the Super Bowl a little bit. He showed off some athleticism. You know, Julio Jones on the field, you can never worry too much about anything else taking place. On top of that, you have Tevin Coleman, Devonta Freeman, Taylor Gabriel stretching the field. So, you know, I think if we see Mohamed Sanu take a step back in targets, I think we could see an increase. I think overall, the Falcons offense is going to see a lot more pass attempts in 2017. So I definitely can agree with that. Austin Hooper one, it's like, I'm trying to figure out where, how high I could put him in my rankings, but I definitely can see breakout potential there.
So my guy is Zach Ertz. He ends the season on fire every single year. He gets overdrafted as a result, and I've always avoided him. But the opposite's happening this season. I mean, I guess not the opposite, because he was great to end the season again. But his ADP is just number 106 overall. Everyone's just tired of getting burned by the hype. So we have the great post-hype sleeper. I love post-hype sleepers. The matter of the fact is, he saw 112 targets last season for 853 yards. So he had 58.3 yards per game, which was only behind Kelsey, Gronk, and Olsen among tight ends. I know there's other pieces to the puzzle in Philly now, but there's a huge ceiling with Ertz, as there's been all along, but everyone seems to be ignoring it this year. Not me, I'll take him. Tags, you're not going to believe this. I've got him ranked above Hunter Henry right now.
Wow. I mean, I'm not high on Hunter Henry, you know that, but Zach Ertz I'm particularly not excited about. And the reason I say that is because he scored 25% of his fantasy points in one game. And as a matter of fact, you look at two games where the majority of his production came from. They both came while Jordan Matthews was sidelined. There was two games. In those games, Ertz averaged 15.5 targets, 109 yards, and 1.5 touchdowns. Like, that's ridiculous, right? Even more ridiculous are his numbers with Matthews in the lineup, where he averaged 6.3 targets, 49 yards, and 0.1 touchdowns. Now, what do you think is going to happen when you add Alshon Jeffrey and Torrey Smith into the mix there? It's not going to help Zach Ertz. Target share is going to go down. It's like weird.
Well, Jeffrey's going to have a soft tissue injury like 2 weeks in, as he always does. I mean, Carson Wentz had a 2.6% touchdown rate. 2.6%. That could feasibly double.
That is not good, Bob. I don't know how else to put that. But you know, yeah. You know what I love is the people that tell me that Zach Ertz has upside, but the same people are dismissing Eric Ebron because they're like, Eric Ebron hasn't been able to score touchdowns and this and that. But I don't know if people realize how young this kid is. Like, do you expect a 22-year-old, 23-year-old when he came into the league? Now he's 24. Do you expect someone like that?
As a tight end, yeah.
Exactly. So I actually did a study this offseason in terms of upside for tight ends. Removing Gronk from the equation because he just breaks all metrics. He breaks all, you know, everything. He really does. There in the last 10 years, there has not been a single tight end under the age of 25 who has finished in the top three. So they just don't have that upside. In terms of top 12, they really enter their prime right around the age of 25. So Eric Ebron is getting closer. And, you know, to say he can't score touchdowns, I think is wrong. You know, Anquan Boldin there saw so many targets. He was so efficient there. There was no reason not to go to him. But Eric Ebron, in terms of yards per game among tight ends last year, was number three. So I can't dismiss Eric Ebron. I imagine he's going to take a step forward. And if he scores seven touchdowns, which is a realistic possibility, I think Eric Ebron has a chance to finish as a top five fantasy tight end.
Oh, absolutely. He could finish as a top three tight end. I have no problem seeing that happening. I love Ebron. He's like the better version of Zach Ertz.
Yeah,
he is.
I think that's actually a fair way to put it, too, because if you look at what Anquan Boldin did last year, I think his red zone market share was like 26%. And when you take that out of the equation, that's a lot of high leverage targets that are being tossed in the fold. And they did add to their wide receiver corps through the draft. So it's not as if those are all up for grabs and they're going to go directly to Ebron, but I think that just the role that he has in that offense outside of the red zone, I think a 17% market share in the games that he played last year, that's not really taken into account at his ADP. You're getting a higher floor from Eric Ebron than you get from most tight ends, and the touchdowns at that point are kind of just a bonus at his ADP.
Yeah, he saw six red zone targets last year. That's at six. Anquan Boldin had 22 red zone targets, so removing Boldin is massive in terms of like what his, you know, his ability could be this year and his upside could be. So love it. Love it.
Okay, quarterback time, Jim. Who are you going with?
So you guys promised not to talk about Tyrod Taylor. I never made such a promise. I didn't know
there
that was a ban on this show. So I'll just talk about Tyrod a bit. If we're looking at him and what he has done his first 2 years as a starter, he ran for at least 560 yards and had four touchdowns in both years, despite never playing a full 16 games in either year. He had at least 15 points in 12 of 15 games last year, and I think that that's something that people don't think about with Tyrod. They don't think about the floor that he has from a weekly perspective, which is kind of the way that I want to view quarterbacks. Tyrod has that. And then you look at his rushing potential, he has a ceiling too. And at quarterback 16, it's kind of, to me, as if we're all hyper worried about the Bills front office not liking Tyrod. Sure, maybe they struggle and they bench him, but who cares? He's the 16th ranked quarterback. You drop him, you stream Andy Dalton or Carson Palmer, something like that, you're not missing out on that much. So to me, Tyrod Taylor's price does not match his potential. So if you guys aren't going to touch him, I will, and say that I will happily take Tyrod. I think he's my quarterback 10 this year, and he's quarterback 16 in consensus ranks. So to me, that's just a scream value.
It is the single stupidest price out there. It does not make any sense to me.
Nope.
Yeah, I don't get it at all. I don't know why. They added Zay Jones too, so I don't understand why that's happening.
They're going to be throwing
more.
Yeah,
and they lost Rex Ryan, which is going to help a lot.
Right.
That's a positive. That's like a good... it's nuts to me. I don't understand it. I'm actually highest on Tyrod Taylor. I've been told I'm a little out of control, but I have him as my number seven quarterback. And
oh, you know, so what he does every single year?
Exactly. That's the part where people are like, wow, Mike, I'm not as bold as you. I'm like, how is that bold? Like, how is it bold? Like, and the best part about it is that the people that argue with me and say, well, Sammy Watkins is going to get hurt and there goes his value. Did you know that Tyrod Taylor averages just one fantasy point per game less without Sammy Watkins? Like, wow. Tyrod Taylor makes it happen with his feet. Adding Zay Jones to the offense does give him a possession style receiver. Charles Clay actually stepped up as the year went on last year.
Yeah, he did.
We haven't seen Tyrod Taylor throw the ball more than 434 times in a year, so I don't think that we've even seen the ceiling of what Tyrod Taylor actually can do.
All right, who's your QB tags?
My QB, actually, Jim mentioned it. Andy Dalton's my quarterback, the one that, you know, I'm going to end up... If I miss out on someone like Tyrod Taylor for whatever reason, which is probably not going to happen, but Andy Dalton, most people don't know, he's been a QB1 in three of the last five seasons. And not just that, but he was a top 12 quarterback in one of the other seasons, 2015, before he got hurt. So he's essentially been a QB1 in four of the last five seasons. He's done that while throwing the ball 590 times or less, which is not common. Considering the state of their offensive line, it's hard to see them lean on the run. In 2017, it does take time to build continuity regardless of the talent up front, and they did lose two important parts of their offensive line. So while some people do say that that's a knock on Dalton, you're not paying top dollar for him. It's not like you're paying that QB1 price tag that he's finished as in four of the last five seasons. You're paying QB19 right now. It's kind of dumb. You add in John Ross, who adds another dimension to the game. You add in Joe Mixon.
Joe Mixon can catch.
Yeah, the best thing that he does is catch the ball out of the backfield. He reminds me of Matt Forte catching the ball out of the backfield, and we all know that Forte has been a phenomenal receiver in the league for a long time. So for me, Andy Dalton just continues to be undervalued, and if you're looking for a team where you want to stream quarterbacks and put two together, grab Tyrod Taylor and Andy Dalton, and you're going to be more than okay.
Plus, I think the Bengals are worse than they've been in a long time. Dalton's probably going to throw the ball more. Do you guys remember the Andy Dalton for MVP?
I do.
That was a real thing. He was playing such great football.
Do you know, here's a fun fact. Since the start of 2013, Andy Dalton has averaged more yards per attempt than Tom Brady.
Oh, man. That's a great stat.
He was at 7.95 yards per attempt last year when A.J. Green is healthy. He was at 7.24 without him, and I don't think people really are accounting for the fact that A.J. Green is one of the best wide receivers in the game and healthy, and they added John Ross. And you're not going to add in John Ross unless you plan on throwing the football. Tyler Boyd, John Ross, Brandon LaFell, on top of A.J. Green and Tyler Eifert, they are going to throw. They're going to throw a lot. Yeah. And they're probably going to do it pretty well based on the way Andy Dalton has performed throughout his career.
We could just remove Tyler Boyd from the conversation.
That's fair.
Right?
Okay.
John Ross is going to open things up for A.J. Green so much. I'm drafting A.J. Green above Mike Evans because I think he's just going to have a huge season.
Yeah, the only thing is injury risk. That's the only thing I'm worried about with Green. But 100%, like I think Jim said it, is he's a top three talent at wide receiver in the NFL, and he's consistently undervalued. And the fact that Dalton has done all this without A.J. Green and Tyler Eifert on the field together for a majority of the time is something special. And like I said, I love John Ross. Like I've said, I love John Ross, and he's more than just a speed guy. And then, you know, we talk about it all the time with Joe Mixon, the fact that he's a true three down running back. So, you know, when you have A.J. Green and John Ross on the perimeter and you have Joe Mixon out of the backfield, how often can you really bring a blitz? How often can you stack a box against Andy Dalton? You know what I mean? So,
yeah. Okay, I'm just going to keep this one simple. Take a look at the single season passing leaders. Peyton Manning's in the top 10 once. Tom Brady and Dan Marino once. Kurt Warner? Nope, never did it. Matthew Stafford? Two times. Stafford's still just 29 years old. That's the prime of a quarterback's career. It's not like he's been a slouch the past 4 years either. He has more yards per attempt than Andrew Luck in that time. People forget how good he is because the Lions had a strong defense, so they played a different style. This year, they have their worst team since 2012, and I'll bet you he gets a bump in pass attempts and air yards from last year, as well as touchdown percentage. 30 touchdowns and 4,500 yards is a top six quarterback, and I think there's a strong possibility that happens.
I understand where you're trying to go with this with Stafford in terms of the bad defense and that, but at the same time, their defense wasn't great over the second half of last year, right? And over the first six games, Stafford threw three or more touchdowns in four of the six games. The problem is the 10 games that ensued after that, he threw one or zero touchdowns in seven of the 10 games, never threw more than two. So Stafford did, as the year went on, he may have finished as a top 10 fantasy quarterback, but if you go through his game logs, it actually tells a completely different story over the final 10 weeks. That's kind of the style the team wants. Amir Abdullah coming back is going to help, you know, boost their run game a little bit. So I have my concerns about Stafford, but his history, as you mentioned, Bobby, that really can't be ignored. I think Stafford is like that guy who I don't own. I don't think I'll own a lot of just because he doesn't excite me. But at the same time, I wouldn't give somebody crap for drafting someone like Stafford.
I mean, I'm looking at the quarterbacks who could be top four quarterbacks. Obviously, Rodgers, Brady, Breeze, Luck, we expect those guys. Russell Wilson could do it. Matt Ryan could do it again. Cam Newton could do it. I really don't think so. I think Matthew Stafford has a better shot than any of those guys, including Matt Ryan, of being a top four quarterback this year. All right, guys, on to the listener mailbag. And we don't have as much time as I had thought, so we're going to save some questions for the next time we do the listener mailbag, which, now that we're doing three shows a week, can be a lot more often. But the first question comes from Mike, and he says, running backs fly off the board in my league, like way ahead of ADP. Should I change my approach for this league?
Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, I think you kind of have to in a way, but the problem is you can't change it super drastically. Like, let's say, you know, they're falling off the board. You kind of have to go based on your tiers. This is why I always recommend going by a tier-based ranking approach, like not going, this guy is my number one, two, three, four. You want those guys grouped into tiers. And let's say that you've got a tier that cuts off, and then there's a huge fall off to your next tier. You may have to take a guy ahead of slot where you normally take them in order to avoid that drop-off in the tier. So yes, I would change my drafting style a little bit, but make sure you're not going like out of your way and taking people outlandishly early for no real reason. So yes, it does influence my drafting strategy, but I want to make sure I'm doing so in order to follow the tiers that I have at each position. Let's say that I there's a big fall off. I want to make sure I'm accounting for that fall off as I'm making each pick.
The only thing this changes for me is I'm changing my first round just a little bit. Like, instead of taking AJ Green and Mike Evans ahead of LeSean McCoy and Devontae Freeman and Melvin Gordon, I'd bump all three of those running backs up ahead of Green and Evans, just because I don't think there's that big of a difference. I just want to make sure that I get my running back early, because then I can wait and pick the league apart by adding, you know, 5-6 running backs that I think have high upside and definitely hit on one of them, maybe two or three. So I just like to get a running back in the first round if I can.
Yeah, I wouldn't really change my strategy too much. I'm always looking to get the best player available on the board, and if that's a wide receiver, it's a wide receiver. I never go into a draft with a certain strategy saying I want to do zero RB or anything like that, but there's been rosters that I've started with four wide receivers, and everybody's like, well, are you going to grab a running back? And I'm like, I mean, if you guys just keep leaving these top-tier wide receivers for me, I'm going to keep taking them. And, you know, as the year goes on, you're able to do trades and things like that. I typically do want at least one top 12 running back that I can guarantee, you know, 250 carries for. That's what I want. I want one foundation running back, and then the other ones, you know, when we get down into the area of CJ Anderson, the Mike Gillisleys, the Ty Montgomerys, like that area, that's when I could take my chances and stockpile a few of those guys. But as long as I get one top 12 running back, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, if you all want to send in your questions for the listener mailbag, it's mailbag@fantasypros.com. Just try to keep it short and simple so we can get on the show, and make sure to give us your league settings so we know what we're actually answering here. There was one question that came in from Ken that I really liked. He wanted to know, well, I don't really like it because I don't think it's, you know, there's going to be that much disagreement, but I want to talk about the theory and how to answer these types of questions. He wants to know if he should keep Russell Wilson at $2 or Jay Ajayi at $11. Tags, why don't you go first on this one?
That's a solid value on both of them if you're talking about like a $200 salary cap auction league or something like that. So, I mean, for me, I'm probably going to go Ajayi just because they're both values. And as much as Russell Wilson's a value there, we talked about Tyrod Taylor earlier. We talked about Dalton. You can get quarterbacks later. If there's any year where I'm like more than okay waiting at quarterback, it's this year, because once you get outside those top four or five guys, you can find a reason to try and bump anybody up there. So you could probably get another quarterback for really cheap, whereas Jay Ajayi, you're not going to be able to get a 250 carry running back for probably cheaper than $35. So for me, I'm definitely going to look for the savings here with Ajayi and go with him.
Yeah, I absolutely wholeheartedly agree, too, because Jay Ajayi is the 7th ranked running back right now, as far as a consensus ranking goes, and Russell Wilson's the 5th ranked quarterback. Like, just by looking at that, and we know the replaceability of quarterback relative to running back, I don't think you really have a choice, because if you keep Russell Wilson, it means you're not keeping Jay Ajayi, and the opportunity cost associated with doing that is so tremendous, where I almost will never keep a quarterback unless it's like some screaming value, and it doesn't prevent me from keeping another skill position guy. So to me, it's Jay Ajayi and no real thought going into that.
For sure.
So you're keeping Blake Bortles in your league this year? Is that what you're saying, Joe?
Yes, 100%. Absolutely. My favorite quarterback. Favorite of all time. Man.
I agree with these guys. Keeping Wilson at that price saves you $12. Just use the Fantasy Pros auction calculator. It's an amazing tool. I'm not just hyping it up because I work for them. It's the best. I used it before I worked here, okay? Maybe $15 you're saving once you factor in the value saved by everyone else's keepers and the inflated prices that are going to follow. But with Jay Ajayi, you're saving $29. I mean, that's substantially more. The answer is definitely Ajayi here.
Yeah, no, I agree there. And it's funny, I have my own personal question that I want to ask you guys. And it's in my own home keeper league, where I'm kind of torn on two players. And I kid you not. So we face these same decisions you guys do. And I usually, what advice would I give to one of my followers? And I always look at it that way. But this one, I'm actually pretty torn. I'm leaning a certain way, but I'm not going to tell you which way. So we lose the round that the player was drafted in, and it goes forever. So these players, Jay Ajayi, I have to choose between Ajayi for a 6th round pick or Travis Kelce for a sixth round pick. My other two keepers are Julio Jones for a fourth, which I got when he was drafted, and Michael Thomas for a sixth. So I'll essentially lose a seventh round pick for either Ajayi or Kelce. Which one would you guys go with?
So I'll go first. Yeah, that's same thing for me. I think it's probably a pretty healthy margin, and that may be influenced by the fact that I like a lot of late round tight ends this year, which is weird considering the position is awful. Yeah. But I think it's pretty easy for me to go Jay Ajayi there. Even with Jeremy Maclin being out in Kansas City, I think that it's Ajayi by a decently healthy margin.
Yeah. Every single thing that Jim has said this episode, you know, I agree. You've been right on the money, Jim.
I'll take it. I was worried when you said that we agreed during the baseball one. I got a little bit worried, but I'm glad to hear that at least, Bobby.
Well, I mean, you still have to be right. You can't just agree with me. Like, if you agree with me and then make all our answers wrong, that does not count.
If we're sinking, we're going down together, baby.
So wait, do you guys put any thought into the fact that Jay Ajayi, his knee might, it's bone on bone and it might just break at any time? And that's why I'm saying is like, I
sure,
get to think
otherwise
about the fact,
he'd be drafting the top eight.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I get the fact to think about that Travis Kelce is, I mean, I'd say that he's not even at his prime yet. Like he's still got another 2-3 years of his prime numbers. And we haven't even seen his ceiling with the touchdown numbers. So it's like trying to think. I mean, if it was straight up 1 year keeper, yeah, it would be Ajayi for me. But I'm thinking like future, like if I can keep Travis Kelce for a sixth round forever, that's the part that's got me like really tilting.
It's good to remember though that Kelce does have knee injuries in his past as well. So it's not a
he does.
Completely clean bill of health there either.
Plus he has Alex Smith, you know, that's
Well, it's going to be Patrick Mahomes soon, and that's another plus for him, where I think that's the thing is people are undervaluing even Chris Conley to an extent in Dynasty, where Patrick Mahomes fits his skill set much more than Alex Smith's, you know what I mean? Conley's got that massive speed to get down the field. Tyreek Hill, like Patrick Mahomes could actually turn this into a very, very explosive offense.
I remember when you were making fun of me about Chris Conley. So now you're like all of a sudden a Chris Conley fanboy?
In redraft, I would not touch Chris Conley. That's what we're talking about here, Bobby. And you said in redraft, I would not touch Chris Conley in redraft because Patrick Mahomes is not the quarterback.
Whatever, man. Whatever.
I love you, dude.
You're wrong. I'm just messing, man.
That's awesome.
All right, Jack from Texas. He's wondering if we all have a rule of thumb for converting picks in certain rounds to certain price values in auctions. This is an interesting question.
All right, so yes, if you go on the Draft Wizard, you're able to look at that. So basically what I would do with that, if you're looking for picks, you look at the player who's taken in that range, and that's how you would convert it almost into a value. It's really weird with a cheat sheet for auctions. You want to take your rankings. Like, we have an auction calculator, basically, on our site where you can go there, and it gives you the generic values four positions on a $200 budget, we'll say. And from there, you can adjust whoever's rankings you want. If you want my rankings, you want Bobby's rankings, you can go there and you can put our rankings into it and just keep the dollar amounts the same. It'll give you basically the tier breakdown of it.
Yeah.
And if, you know, let's say that, you know, Rob Gronkowski's on there for, you know, $38. And if we know Rob Gronkowski goes at the end of the second round, so a late second round pick is essentially worth $38. You know what I mean? Like, that's the best way I think I could break it down.
I would not think about translating it from rounds to auction values. I would just use the tools that we have, because then you don't have to do the work. You know, you just have it on a sheet right in front of you, and you can set it up exactly the way you want, so you're completely prepared for your auction draft.
Yeah, I think I view it a little bit differently, just because in a draft, like a snake draft, it's viewed as being linear, and auction drafts aren't linear. Like, the difference in cost between the first overall pick and the second overall pick is exactly similar to the second overall pick and the third overall pick. And because that's the case, and we know that's not the case with auction drafts, where David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell may be way above that third overall pick, that's why I can't really convert it necessarily. I think the tools help a lot, and I think that they're things that I use as well. They're good little shortcuts too, for sure. But I think if we're talking about straight going from one thing to another, the nature of an auction draft and why auction drafts are honestly so cool is that it kind of prevents them from being 100% analogous, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
it does very much. Actually, yes, take Jim's advice there. That was phenomenal.
But I'm talking to JJ too much. JJ Zacharyson, my boss at Number 5.
That sounds like JJ.
Yeah, he's just pounded that into my head for 4 years now. So I think that's kind of, it's just like the way that JJ does it, it's kind of passed down onto me as well.
For sure. JJ's a smart dude.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, he is. All right, guys, final question of the episode. This is from Julie in Illinois. She wants to know, last year, Tyrell Williams and Rishard Matthews were no-namers with virtually zero upside hype going into the season. Who are the no-namers that could splash into the top 15 wide receivers this season? I love that question. Tags, why don't you go first on this one?
All right, so a player I've talked about before is Devin Funchess. You know, people have seemed to have forgotten about him. If you go back to before last year, there was a lot of hype on Devin Funchess in the preseason. You know, people were doubting Kelvin Benjamin coming back from his torn ACL. They were talking about Funchess and the fact that he's a more athletic wide receiver. His size is good for a red zone threat. We saw him, I want to say, in the first preseason game, he made like a circus catch in the end zone, and it got people excited, and you saw him vaulting up boards. After last year, people don't want to draft him, and it's really odd because he was behind almost like Ted Ginn for sure. He was behind the depth chart, and then he split time with Corey Brown. Both of those players are gone. Cam Newton's best attribute is his strong arm. So Devin Funchess is a guy that's been able to rack up 15.6 yards per reception over the last 2 years. He's also scored 9 touchdowns on 121 career targets. So when you look that far down the list and you try and figure out guys that can potentially score double-digit touchdowns, Devin Funchess is really atop my list down there. He's someone that I definitely can see is a bold prediction. You know, I think we did in our bold prediction show, I actually said that I think it's possible that Devin Funchess scores more fantasy points than Kelvin Benjamin. And if you give me a logical argument outside of the fact that, you know, Kelvin Benjamin's just seen more targets the last 2 years, and that's why he's going to continue to see more targets, that's really not fair. I'm talking about what the team has brought in. You know, they brought in Christian McCaffrey. They brought in CJ Samuel. You know, like going through this, Greg Olsen's going to eat up targets. Where does Kelvin Benjamin fit in? Because the short stuff, the littler guys are going to get. The middle of the field stuff, Greg Olsen should see the majority of. And Devin Funchess, we've seen him go over the top of defenses. So I think that he's the late round one that I would look into.
All right, Jim, who do you have for us?
Yeah, I think I've got a couple guys who are interesting. Quincy Enunwa was not a total off the board name. I'd put him in that realm because he'll just see so many targets. Another guy I think that is worth looking at is Zay Jones in Buffalo. I had mentioned him briefly before, but what you get there is it's a very short roadblock to targets there because you got Sammy Watkins, who I love this year, but we do know has some injury issues. Then it's Charles Clay, and we saw what Robert Woods did last year in that offense when there was no Sammy Watkins. He was a pretty consistent floor guy from a, you know, just getting targets. They brought Zay Jones in. They spent a decent amount of draft capital to get him. Got a good quarterback in Tyrod Taylor. There aren't a lot of other guys competing for targets. That to me says Zay Jones has a floor. And then when you think of what could happen if Sammy Watkins missed additional time or if that offense throws the ball more often, the upside's there, it's there as well. So to me, I think he's kind of a guy who fits this mold. And, you know, a lot of draft people know Zay Jones. So I'm not like going completely off the board here, but I don't think he's a guy who will get drafted in most shallow leagues. And I think that he probably should be just out of the possibility that targets suddenly become abundantly available in that Buffalo offense.
Yeah. Julie, I'm looking at Tyrell Williams' ADP and ECR last year. It was outside the top 100, and it's really rare for that to happen. So it's probably not going to happen this season. The players that I could see doing it, I mean, it would have to be in an offense where they pass a lot. And in an offense where you've got a skilled player who's just buried in the depth chart. And let's say T.Y. Hilton goes down this year. Philip Dorsett all of a sudden finds his way into targets. He plays really well. He's a very athletic player. He was drafted fairly high. I could see Philip Dorsett making that jump. I'm not going to draft him outside of a really deep league, but he has the skill set. He's in the right scheme to do that type of thing. The other player, I think, belongs to Aaron Rodgers. It's Geronimo Allison. It's not that I think Geronimo Allison is some superstar waiting to happen, but Aaron Rodgers does make superstars. So let's say they see one or two injuries, or Geronimo Allison just finds his way into playing time the same way Devontae Adams did last year. I'm not saying he's as talented as Devontae Adams, but yeah, he could be a top 15 wide receiver in the right RNG scenario.
Yeah, no, I like the Allison call, but he did just get suspended for the first game of the season, which is not ideal.
Yeah, just get exposure to good offenses, even if it is a guy who will miss the first game. Just get exposure to offenses that will score points.
Okay, guys, well, that's all we have for the show today. Jim, we really appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks, guys. It's a lot of fun. It's exciting to get back into football mode. A lot of fun stuff happening, and the preseason is not too far away. It is almost here already.
Welcome back, you baseball guys.
Anyways, remember to subscribe and review us on iTunes if you want to be entered into the Antonio Brown signed jersey giveaway. And thank you to our sponsors, RT Sports and PristineAuction.com. Please show your thanks to them for making the show possible. For Mike Tagliere, I'm Bobby Sylvester. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your football.
I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, ah, yeah. Love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Tenor girl goes shopping.
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
So I know you've got a lot going on, but remember, I'm here for you. So bother me when no one's listening, because I will. Bother me when it feels like it won't get better, because it can. Bother me because you're never a bother. Whether it's a low point or a crisis, get help for yourself or a friend. Learn more at neverabother.org or call or text 988, available 24/7.
Tired of restless nights? At Leesa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. From memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.